Chicago. This is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by a panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Hermaine Hartman, Jennifer Nevins, Mike Miller, and Chris Veronis. Our program tonight coming to you from our own base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. 1-800-723-8289. If you want to email me a comment, it's Bruce Dumont at museum.tv. And if you want to tweet me a comment, it's at Dumo, at D-U-M-O. And at the beginning of the program, by the way, today is National Radio Day. And for those who are listening to this broadcast, and by the way, the only way you're hearing this program is if you were listening to it because of a snafu, which I'll explain later. There is no television or a video version of tonight's show. And I'm going to take you a little inside our broadcast studio here. If the program began this evening, just moments ago, sounding as if a bunch of people were talking and not knowing that they were on the radio, that is exactly what you heard, because we were engaged in a little chatter. I don't think anything untoward was said, but if it is, we'll hear. We'll either hear from the FCC or from program directors around the country. So you sort of joined us in progress, and I looked up from our little chatter here, and I looked and I said, oh, my God, we're 39 seconds into this program already. And then I turned up my volume, and there was the theme song, and I did my opening. And, of course, it wasn't matching to any of the music. So, again, wherever you are, save the tape. It'll go into broadcast museum history. So we've screwed up on National Radio Day. So anyway, we welcome you, and as I was telling everyone, we have a boatload of stuff to discuss this evening, and I'm not even going to go down the list because you know the big stories that we're going to be discussing, and I want to begin with you, Dan Miller. By the way, we should mention we have a card carrying Trump Republican here this evening. We have a card carrying Democrat here this evening, and we also have two. Former or Republicans, neither of whom supported Donald Trump. So that's sort of our mix this evening, and probably represents some of the people that are listening to the broadcast this evening. But my first question to you, Dan, or Mike Miller, do you believe that the events of this past week will make it impossible for the president ever to get back on track in any way, politically or morally or image-wise? What's your answer?
I think, unfortunately, the answer is yes. I support a lot of his ideas in terms of his immigration policy, his tax policy, and so forth. But I'm not sure he's going to be able to get people to work with him. They're not going to want to be associated with him. I'm not sure the Republicans are going to join him.
Chris Veronis also is one of our recalcitrant Republicans this evening. Your answer to the same question.
Well, I think this week we saw Donald Trump morally resign from the presidency. And really all that's left is for the official resignation. Who knows if that'll happen? It's kind of hard to feel hot and cold about this, but that's how I feel. Cold, you know, being this is who this guy is. We've known it all along. We saw it play out over the election during the presidency. And then hot, where you don't want to normalize this sort of moral repugnance. You don't want to normalize it. And so you're conflicted.
Okay. Hermaine Hartman is our card-carrying Democrat, or closest thing to it. Hermaine, your response just to the question, is there a way for Donald Trump to get back on track and put this behind him?
No. Trump is a runaway Republican. And I think he is in such a destructive mode for the party. And I think what America is seeing is a new politic. I think a new politic is evolving. What it is, I don't know what it is, a little bit of that and a little bit of that. Mm-hmm. But we know that Trump is unorthodox, and we also know that he's not a professional politician. Mm-hmm. And we also know that he is not a traditional Republican, conservative, liberal. He's just mm-hmm. not there. So I think you've got a runaway Republican who is a wild man and perhaps mad in the White House. That's what we're looking at.
Okay, now we've heard from three other guests. Now let's hear from our proudly Trump car. I assume you're still proudly a Trump
100%.
Republican.
100%.
Okay. Your reaction to the others and the same question to you. Can he get behind this and move on?
He can get behind this and move on. It's made increasingly difficult by the Republicans, who have no interest in supporting him and are nothing more than useless cowards. And that's a real shame. But on the points that you just mentioned about him being unorthodox, absolutely. Not a conventional Republican, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Not a professional politician, mm-hmm. absolutely. And that's what got him into office. That's why we love him.
Jennifer.
Chris, don't interrupt me.
Chris, do not interrupt me tonight.
Let her
finish.
These are features. They're not bugs to 62 million and possibly more Americans in this country. So we're not alarmed by that. When we hear something like that, we don't clutch our pearls and say, oh, no, he's a runaway Republican. Run, baby, run. Run as far as you can get from this party that's becoming more and more irrelevant as the days go on.
Okay. I want to kind of close this part, and I want to move on to a bigger, broader issue. When Donald Trump said this past week, he made his initial statement that wasn't good enough for the Democrats or the media and some Republicans. Then he made his second statement, and that maybe made it worse, and other statements. Nothing has been able to be clarified. When he made the comment that there were good people on both sides after saying there were bad people on both sides, and he named the Nazis and the white supremacists and the Ku Klux Klan, named them by name, did not name any group on the left or protesters to the alt-right, didn't name them by name. When he said that there were good people on both sides, what did you hear when you heard him say that? How did you interpret that, Mike Miller?
I didn't know exactly how to respond other than it is my understanding, and I wasn't there, but there were people there who were protesting the destruction of statues. Right. And they believe that their culture is under attack. And there are, I think, decent people who can hold that position without being a racist, a supremacist, a Nazi, an anti-Semite. You can believe that these are up there and this is simply part of our culture. And I think he may have been talking about them, because you can't be talking about the Nazis and the white supremacists.
I want to get reaction. This is a very key point of this whole discussion and the way the media has played it. Hermaine, what did you hear when he said those words?
I think it was Trump in his unorthodox, non-traditional way trying to be diplomatic. Mm-hmm. And my question would be, and define both sides. We saw one side, obviously. So what was the other side? Was it counter to that? Was it ultra to that? What was the other side that he was speaking of? And I don't think he defined that. I don't think that got definition.
Well, he didn't. This is where he did not name the groups.
Right.
But again, when we come back, I want to hear from our other guests. And for those listening in Radioland tonight on our National Radio Day, I want to hear from you. How did you react when you heard those words? Because the way that the left and the Democrats and the media reacted to it or overreacted to it was they interpreted it as saying that Donald Trump believes there are good Nazis. He didn't say that. He talked about good people and bad people on both sides. I want to get your reaction to that comment and a continued discussion of how we have aggressive free speech in this country without violence. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago, and let's get back to the discussion. The question I want to get from you, Chris, when you heard the president talk about there were good people on both sides, after saying that there had been violence on both sides, but then he came back. It seems to me that the term, when he said there were good people on both sides, that seems to be the one thing that's driving everybody up the wall. Did it drive you up the wall, and did you understand what he was saying?
There's a lot of things that bothered me. That was one of them. But I'm going to say something that might shock you, Jennifer, that I honestly believe, I don't know Donald Trump. I can't look into his heart. I don't think and I don't believe he is a racist or harbors white supremacist attitude.
Right.
I think Donald Trump's worst problem is his self. And the Politico had a really good article this week that said that the White House staff is petrified because Trump has like about four or five different triggers that set him off into a rage. One of them is if he feels like he's being lied to, if you contradict him, or if you tell him what to do. What happened is he had to painfully read a statement
that was the first statement,
right?
And by the way,
and then he took it back.
I criticized him for that last week on this program. If you're speaking from your heart, which he frequently does, you don't have to read it off a card.
It's still a valid criticism.
But the second piece of that is what we're discussing now.
Right.
Because he did not reference the good people on both sides. I want to come to Jennifer now. When you heard that, mm-hmm. what did you hear?
Well, I understood that the dynamic of what happened in Charlottesville. Okay, and you had a mixed group of people, and there will be Nazis and white nationalists that will attach themselves to anything that is right of center. And so they came there, and then they were holding their rally, and what happens is Antifa, Black Lives Matter, and other assorted people showed up, and violence ensued. And according to the police, violence ensued from Antifa. There were police officers, two of them, in critical condition, that claim that they were assaulted by Antifa. So when you have Donald Trump come out and say that he disavows all white supremacy and that that was bigotry and that
Nazis and Ku Klux Klan.
And Nazi and Ku Klux Klan, and also says, but I have to condemn violence on both sides. I'm paraphrasing what he said. I fail to understand what in the world any thinking person would object to when they hear that statement.
The press conference, which, by the way, is supposed to be part of the agenda, Trump's agenda about infrastructure,
yes,
completely overwhelmed.
And let me explain, why that happened.
And let me finish, Jennifer.
Okay.
Completely overwhelmed by Trump, stepped in his own headline. The reason why he was there to talk about infrastructure, and he went off on a tailspin.
Okay, now, but Chris, you're now taking it to another level of how he was communicating this week. I'm trying to keep this discussion right at the moment to the words he used and how different people, let me finish, even around this table, heard those words. Because he's a 70-year-old man, okay? He's a 72-year-old man who's looking at videotape. He knows that there are some people who went there, as Professor Miller said, there are some people that went there because they disagreed with taking down the Confederate statue. They have a legitimate right to be upset about that, to go there and do it. Now, here's something that Martha Raddatz suggested today, and I agree with Martha Raddatz on this point. I don't generally agree with her on some political stuff. She said that if you went there for that reason and you saw Nazi or anti white supremacist signs or rhetoric, at that point you should have turned around and walked home.
100%. Sure.
I would have.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yep. Now, but it gets back to, if somebody went to that rally originally to protest the taking down of the statues, were they bad people when they went to that rally to do it?
No.
Likewise, on the other side, if you went there to protest the presence of Nazis and KKK in your neighborhood, and you didn't have gas masks on, and your face was exposed, you weren't there as part of the Antifa to create chaos, weren't you a good person when you went there, Shermaine? Don't we have people that went there initially that may have been good? Mm-hmm.
They were crowded out.
That's my point.
Yes,
to argue that 100% of the people on both sides, he was saying that the media is basically suggesting that 100% of the people that were there were there for a different reason. I'm going to get Hermaine's reaction and then get yours, Chris.
Well, again, I repeat, I think it was Trump being, in Trump's way, being diplomatic. All right, that's really, really what I think. I think he was trying to get in the middle of it. We have a president who is not presidential. We have a president who knows TV. He's media savvy, and he knows reality TV. And I think that's what he is doing. He is doing reality TV.
You think he's making this up?
I don't think he's making it up. Not for him, but I think he's doing reality TV.
Hermaine, I'm going to challenge you on your premise.
Okay.
I want to get back to the question I asked.
All right.
Here's a 72-year-old guy.
70.
He's looking at his videotape. He's looking at all this stuff. And in his mind, there were people that, you know, if you show up with a Nazi flag and Ku Klux Klan and racist, if you do that, you are asking for trouble.
Right. Yeah.
If you show up there and you've already got your black masks on, you are showing up there, you are looking for trouble. You've got two sides. They are ready to rumble. Those people are deplorable. Both sides, deplorable. I agree with that. But the question is, anyone else that was there that might have been there exercising their free speech, their right to assemble, their right to protest, who disagree with the decision to bring down the Robert E. Lee statue, just by going there, does it make them bad people?
No.
Likewise,
no,
are the people that were
frightening
so
scene.
So the answer
Bruce,
is there were good people there.
Bruce, look at it from the television vantage point. It was a frightening scene.
It was.
We're looking at
only
people with guns.
Only because of what they chose to show.
Look, I'm sorry.
Right. No matter look, what. I'm talking about what's on the screen.
Yeah. This is really, really simple.
Let's simplify it. Go.
The optics were horrific.
Yes.
And these are optics.
On both sides.
Yeah. But hold on. Mm-hmm. There's an important way to do this. And Trump read. You could see how pained he was. You spoke about this last week.
Yes.
He did not. That statement wasn't him.
No.
Okay? Mm-hmm. And he rescinded it the following day with that press conference. Mm-hmm. Okay? I think it's very simple. And had he stuck to that, this would have been like a 1-2-day news story.
No.
And instead,
there's no way.
Well, hold on. What people wanted to hear was an unequivocal, full-throated condemnation of Nazis, white supremacist Ku Klux Klan. That's what they wanted to hear because these guys have been around since after the Civil War. There's a long and painful legacy that they have brought with them.
What?
Well, hold on.
Okay.
So you cannot put Antifa, however ludicrous and violent and deplorable as they are, you cannot put them on the same plane. These guys are
Hold on, just a minute. We're going to go to the professor, and then we're going to get Jennifer.
I was
professor.
With you until that point.
Right.
One of the issues is...
Hear me out.
If these people's speech, as deplorable as it is, the white supremacists and so forth, they had the right to speak. And the police have the duty to protect them. And they didn't. And when it was all over and they said, we've got to break this up, they led them directly into the direction of Antifa.
The police didn't handle it well.
Antifa, think of what they did in Berkeley. All the destruction they did. Don't tell me they're good.
Folks, they're more fascistic than what you're... I want to go back to Jennifer, and then we're going to let you make your point. Jennifer, and then we're going to go back to
Chris. There are two twin lies, I would say, right now that speaks directly to this. And this has been repeated over and over again by people that they're asking on the streets and by newscasters and even Republicans right now, that hate speech is not free speech. Somehow this has gotten into the lexicon that somehow it's not. And that's a very, very dangerous thing because who defines hate speech? And it's becoming more and more elastic as the days go on. And also that there are only two sides. There is bigotry and hatred and those who oppose it. So what that casts is an evil side and a good side. And there's no gray area in between.
You're right.
And so the Antifa and Black Lives Matter and anyone else who were over on that other side, they were opposing the bigotry. So therefore you cannot put them on the same plane. And that is a lie. That's leftism. It's not liberalism. Yeah. It is leftism, and that's where we're going.
I think in the spirit of Andrew Young, there's a lot more common ground here than we realize.
I'm surprised.
I agree. There's more than I thought.
Can I add a variable that takes this to another place, takes the news story, continues the news story? It's called social media. So as you're looking at this on television,
yes.
You are reacting to this on your Facebook page or on your Twitter page, and everybody is seeing something horrific, mm-hmm. and they're responding to it. They're saying something about it. Now, the news people, they're looking at this stuff, too.
Mm-hmm.
They look like stormtroopers, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, but that's what that scene looked like. Yeah.
Oh, of course they do.
And then you're hearing Jews will not replace us.
Right.
So you're hearing blacks called savages, mm-hmm. Okay, this is, I mean, what the hell? What is this? So what are we supposed to do, look at this and applaud?
No.
But why the Trump condemnation?
This is offensive.
We're honoring Robert Lee.
This is the slave. This is the guy who was driving slavery. Okay?
And that's been happening for 140
years. Well, so aren't we tired of it? When do white folks get sick of goddamn racism?
What's your language? 1-800-723-8029. Back shortly from Chicago with lots of calls. back in Chicago. Thank you very much for being with us. And Chris, you were making a point. We let two other people in to react to it, and now go back and nail it down for us.
The root cause problem here right now is that both sides are in their own corners, and they want the other side to come to them all the way. That is the problem here. Everything else is a symptom. So to my friends on the right, this Antifa group, these kids in skinny jeans, spoiled brats who look like ISIS, quite frankly. They got a black flag. They wear black masks. Violent. Mm-hmm. Once you commit to violence, you forfeit your membership to society. You're not part of civilization, mm-hmm. okay? That falls squarely on Antifa. But you know what? Mm-hmm. These guys are a bunch of young punks. They're the present-day Occupy Wall Street, the present-day weathermen. Hold on, Mike. I'm just saying, these guys feel like a flash in the pan to me, although they're backwards in their thinking that violence is going to solve is a political solution. They don't hold a candle to the kind of memory that the KKK has in this country, what they've done. And so this is important. What should the president have said? The white supremacists, neo-Nazis, they're not American. They're not what we're all about, okay? And the minute you commit violence, you forfeit. You forfeit any claim. And that goes for people on any side who comes. But the intensity should have been on the people who the KKK. It should have been, the onus should have been there. And Antifa should have been the secondary point. It wasn't, though.
Do you believe, however, when you're talking about this, you said what could Trump have said? I've tried to avoid sort of the political, because mm-hmm. we're dealing with a big thing different than campaign politics right here. But the reality is that the Democratic Party, in serving a significant portion of their base, and the national news media, and I would say corporatist Republicans who are resigning, you know, from his business advisory council this week, they represent people that under no circumstances will give any credit to Donald Trump for doing anything.
Ding, ding,
period.
Ding.
Nothing. And if he slips, or in this particular case, maybe stubs his toe big time, I will defer that maybe that's the better choice.
There's credit I give them.
If they do it, They're going to overplay it. They are going to fan a flame of hysteria.
Right.
It's true.
That has one goal, to drive Donald Trump from the White House. I'm going to finish my point because it's my show. If that movement succeeds, and Donald Trump is perceived to be forced out of office, the reaction within the body politic that we're discussing now, this underlying violence, it will be child's play mm-hmm. compared to what will happen in the future if a portion of Americans will feel that their voice was snuffed out and victim of the left, the media, and corporatist Republicans whose sole goal now is to force Donald Trump from office.
I agreed with much of what you said, with one exception, and that was that Antifa Chris, that the ideas behind Antifa are spreading wildly throughout university campuses.
True.
It is this belief that speech can be violent, and therefore you have the right to respond to speech with violence.
Yeah.
And this is a preposterous position, and Antifa is not a tiny little thing. I hope it will be perceived as a bunch of fools. And you're saying it's a bunch of young people. I can tell you at university campuses, there are huge numbers of young people who believe that speech can equal violence, and they have the right to shut it down,
That's
violently.
Exactly what the weathermen were all about in the 60s and 70s.
And that's what I'm saying. There were bad people on both sides. Antifa was not pure here.
The New York Times editor, our
columnist, is saying, I'm in the middle of all this, and all these Antifa people are attacking these other people. Right. There's two or three reports of people who are from what you would consult liberal media.
I think we all agree here.
We are.
Antifa is violent and backwards, and we reject them. I think we all agree on that
point. I don't know if
we
reject
them. I don't, because when Trump called violent...
I do.
Okay. Who agrees with that?
But
who agrees with that at this table?
Nobody at the table. Nobody. I don't believe anybody at the table.
But let me ask you this question. As a media, why is it that the media or leaders of the Democratic Party are never asked to denounce and renounce
never.
The activity.
There you go.
Right about that.
There you go.
Who are
You're
perceived
right
as supporting Black Lives Matter or some of these
right.
other
There's
organizations.
There's a horrible double standard.
Oh.
You're absolutely
ding, ding, ding.
Right.
Do you agree with that, Hermaine?
There's a double standard?
That there's a double standard?
I would agree that there's, absolutely, there's a there's a difference.
Democrats dodged the question.
There's a double standard, no doubt.
They
so all
they
this...
They, but
well,
they,
we
here,
are on the same
let me put a political stuff. They dodge denouncing that from those on the left.
Correct.
They're not necessarily they're not specifically zeroing in on the violent left.
No, they tolerate it.
But they tolerate
yes,
it because they fear that if they denounce the left too much, part of their core constituency is going to view that they've sold out.
Yep.
Just like in this particular case, and I said last week there was a political consideration, because some members of the alt-right are a portion of the Trump victory margin, and maybe this was advice being provided to him by Steve Bannon, maybe or maybe not, maybe it's just Trump's gut. He did not want to initially rile up that part of his support base, because by doing so, it might have infuriated those who are part of the broader right group. So you have both people operating. There's a limit to how much they can criticize.
Yep.
There was a limit to how much they could criticize of what happened in a variety of these police-related things over the last several years.
I've read a lot on this in preparation for this evening. Here's something that Steve Bannon said was the strategy. Is to keep the Democrats talking about race every day so that Trump can talk about economic nationalism.
There you go.
Absolutely, though.
All right? Yeah. Now, if that's the strategy, then they're on point.
They're
winning.
Successful.
They're successful.
And the media is helping them.
And the media is driving the conversation. Hold on. Now, What was the rally about in the first place? We've gotten into the politics of it.
The statue.
But it was about the statue.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And what the statue represents and what the statue means. What it means to Southerns is one thing.
Yeah.
What it means to Northerners is another.
Let's have a discussion.
What it means to whites is one thing. What it means to blacks. Black folks see that stuff, and it represents slavery. It represents rape. It represents the Ku Klux Klan burning down houses and hanging people and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, it's not a goody-goody kind of feeling.
No, but what we know,
we're
how you
the
know
Civil
that it's
War
a
again.
When you know that it's a coordinated attack against Trump and it's not strictly based on civil rights or anything, Chris, let me talk. When it's not based, how I know that that's not really what at the heart of this mob action is when you see that this tearing down of the statues, and it's happening as we're speaking, wasn't happening during the Obama administration. It wasn't happening during the Clinton administration. It wasn't happening during the Bush administration. It was happening
it
now
wasn't
during
happening
the Trump
administration. It wasn't happening in the administration of Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
No, who actually praised
and Ku Klux Klan routinely supported Southern
right.
Democrats to
that's
keep
right.
them in power.
Well,
and Lyndon Johnson
and
either.
That's right.
So
but listen, to my what I'm trying to get at is the outrage that's happening. Yes, are there people genuinely outraged that these statues are there? Absolutely. There are people of good faith who are very upset about that. But the coordinated takedown, when you have this amalgamation of groups funded by George Soros coming out and kind of upending everything that's happening in the South and removing these statues, you know that this is a move directed toward Donald Trump. Just like when you have women's groups, and we've talked about this before, Bruce, just like when you have women's groups saying, we want equal pay, and they're talking about things that they could have been bringing up during the Obama administration, you know it is specifically just against Trump. So there is a big disingenuous level. When Cory Booker says, taking down these monuments is just the beginning, a lot of us in the country are wondering, now, what's just the beginning here? Mount Rushmore cemeteries desecrating the dead because they're Confederate soldiers? Where is this heading? Where is this going?
Let me ask you a question. So the statues have been up for a century.
Yeah. Or more.
Or more.
Yes.
Right? So is this fabricated?
Is what?
This whole thing.
Well, the riots are new.
But if it's about the statue, if it truly is about Robert Lee and what he believes and what he represented and symbolizes and all that, what took him so long?
That's what I'd like to know.
This is 100 years,
that's
okay?
Right. You're making my point for me.
Can
absolutely.
But some
of these statues, I don't have this
the
figure.
The question is now.
Some of the statues may be 100 years old.
They are.
Those statues were put up as a result of Southern culture, which is used as the reason why a lot of people still support them. There were some of them, however, that may have been erected in the late 50s or during the 1960s. Mm-hmm. And those that were erected then were not so much about Southern heritage. Mm-hmm. They were more about a potential rallying cry.
Defiance
mm-hmm. to the federal government and the sweeping civil rights changes that were being dictated by Washington. Now, in that particular case, and there are some states that maybe put the stars and bars on their flags during this period. So I think a big question is, when did that statue go up and where does it fit in context? Was it truly something cultural, or was it a defiant act against the federal government, which had a racist tone to it, at least initially? Back shortly from Chicago with your calls. All right, we are back on the air, folks. Stand by. Let's go to Paul and Racine listening to us tonight on the Internet. Go ahead, Paul. You're on the air.
Hi, everyone. I'd just like to make the comment for those of you who on the panel who were offended by what Donald Trump did or did not say, I think you need to look at your own lack of morality. The only way these problems of racial divide get solved in this country is if there's honesty about the problems on both sides, and all Donald Trump was doing was pointing that out. And I think this is a big part of why you see so many problems in the African American community. When you look at the murder rates in Chicago and Milwaukee, and you have African American leaders basically turning a blind eye to those problems, that shows a complete lack of morality and a complete intellectual dishonesty of where the problems are. And the only way you solve these problems is first admitting that, yeah, there are these problems. And that's what Donald Trump was doing. So for those of you who want a virtue signal and say and condemn Donald Trump for what he did or did not say, you need to take a look at your own lack of morality.
Well, he's talking about me.
Okay, go ahead.
So
go ahead.
He's talking about my supposed lack of morality.
Well, you know, yeah, you laugh.
Well, hold on, Paul. Hold on. You know
Paul,
what we're forgetting
Paul,
here?
Paul, let's let Chris respond, and I promise I'll go back to you, Chris. Hey,
where's the morality in forgetting that someone died at this rally and 17 other people were injured? Where's the morality in that? That is outrageous. And Donald Trump rolled right over that. Donald Trump cannot help himself. The guy's got impulse control. We're not talking about someone that died. We need to name check what's wrong here.
Okay,
and then you could get to both sides.
Paul, back to you.
Okay. When the Dallas police officers were shot and killed, does anybody remember what President Obama said? Did he get criticized for that? The inequalities in the criminal justice system? Where's the morality in that?
Well, I mean,
Six police officers dead.
People who commit crime and violence need to be accountable and responsible for it. I'm not one that's going to point to some kind of system-wide inequity. That's it. That's it. But
Hermaine,
can I say something?
Hermaine, and then we're going to last word to Paul, but Hermaine has the floor right now.
You've got a deeper issue here. I don't think it's about the statue. I don't think it's about the mob. What we're looking at is racism in America. You're looking at slavery. If you can break this down politically all you want. You can say the Democrats gave you Jim Crow laws. The Democrats gave you the Black Code laws. You can say all of that. You can blame it from party to party to party. But you're looking at the inhumaneness. You're looking at dried up resources. You're looking at years of neglect. You're looking at irresponsibility. You've got two sides that are mad. This is the Civil War all over again. That's really kind of what you're looking at. You can say, President, this didn't do that. President, that didn't do this. You can also go back to President Eisenhower and how he reacted when Dr. King forced some things to him. You can look at Lyndon Johnson, and you can say,
long history, right?
Long history. I mean, you can keep going back. What does it solve? These are American issues. You can go all the way back, and I think Trump was right when he said this, when he said, now, if you all are going to take statues down, you're going to go back to Thomas Jefferson, who wrote the most eloquent words ever on freedom, but he went home to a slave. He went home to slavery. George Washington, our first president, did whatever. He went home to slaves. He had slaves. This is the core of American society, whether we like it or not. And I think we're still reckoning with it in some shape, form, or fashion. The pendulum, Mr. Historian, the pendulum has swung. We go to the right, and then we go to the left, and eventually we get to the middle. It's about a 20-year process to do that, to get to the middle. Right. And I think we're trying to get to the middle.
Okay. Let's go to, back to you, Paul, for the last word, then we're going to move on.
I think some of what the last person who spoke said is true. But to solve any of these problems, there has to be an acknowledgement by both sides that there's problems. Donald Trump basically called out both sides. Now, you can argue at all at any point in the manner in which he did it, but to suggest that he is a racist, to suggest that he has an agenda against the African-American community.
I didn't suggest that, sir. Nope, I didn't suggest that. Nobody suggested that.
Can I finish my
yes,
thought?
Sure.
I let you talk. Okay. And the other thing that needs to happen is people need to stop looking at what people say and what they do. I mean, Donald Trump is a man who opened up his country club to African-Americans. He employs them. What politicians employ African Americans?
Oh, sir, you sound like
Paul,
you come from
Paul,
the deep, dark ages.
We're going to move on. Thanks for your call.
We're moving on.
We're going to Carl, line two, and calling from Cocoa Beach, Florida on the Internet. Go ahead, Carl, please. Carl, are you there on line two?
This is Carrie, not Carl.
Oh, Carrie, I'm sorry. I didn't see the R. Go ahead.
Sorry. I'm listening to the radio and somebody else is on.
Go ahead. You're on the air right now. Please speak up, Carrie.
Someone else is speaking. Carrie,
we're gonna turn the radio. You haven't turned the radio off, and we're going to move on to another caller. Again, it's the 21st century. When you call a radio show, make sure your radio is off before you call, or you're going to sound like Carrie. Let's go to Rick in Conway, South Carolina, listening to us on WRNN. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I apologize. I'm not good with names, and I hadn't heard your show before, but you're conducting a really good panel discussion with a real minimum of interruptions, and people are having a good discussion, so it's very interesting.
Thank you.
But the preface by your Democrat supporters attacking the president was nothing but name-calling, and we will have no respect for their opinions if they don't back it up with facts. They called him. He did not retract his statement. I heard every word of his press conference Sunday, and he did not retract. It's really breaking up badly on my end.
Yep.
But I hope you can hear me okay.
I heard you fine. We do have to go to a commercial break. We'll discuss your comments when we come back. 1-800-723-8289. We've just heard from Conway, South Carolina. What about you, wherever you're listening, from coast to coast? Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Obviously, one of the other big stories last week is that Steve Bannon is out as a special political advisor to the President of the United States. He was a hot potato from the very moment. He's been giving some interviews since leaving. And here's one from the Weekly Standard on Friday, quote, "The Trump presidency that we fought for and won is over. We still have a huge movement, and we will make something of this Trump presidency, but that presidency is over." Then he went on to say also later in that interview, talking about the Republican establishment, "The Republican establishment has no interest in Trump's success on this. They're not populists. They're not nationalists. They had no interest in his program. Zero." End of quote. Right. The departure of Steve Bannon from the White House, mm-hmm. how big a blow is that to the Trump presidency and the likelihood that Trump could get reelected, Jennifer?
I think that Steve Bannon is kind of unleashed now. I never was really that thrilled of Steve Bannon being in the White House, only because I felt like he could do his best work where he did his best
undercover
work. Well, and it was Breitbart, also above cover. And yeah. I think that while I'm sorry to see him go, because I think he was a much-needed ally of Trump's in the White House, and I think that he had his best interest at heart, I don't think this is the end of Trump's, you know, populism. I don't think anything of the sort. I think that, as Bannon said, he actually said, "My work is just beginning. I'm going to do my best work outside of the White House." That's something else he also said. So I'm not taking it too hard.
Do you agree with that, Chris? That he, as a potential political operative with his power of Breitbart, that he could be more effective in supporting Donald Trump from that position than the one he just left?
Breitbart's going to do what Breitbart has done, if whether Bannon's there or not. I mean, they describe themselves as a platform for the alt-right. I mean, you can keep it, as far as I'm concerned.
They don't describe themselves as the platform for the alt-right.
Steve Bannon's words, word for word, Steve Bannon said
That's right.
Go to their website. It's still on there.
Yeah, he has
And you know who else they talk about, Jennifer? Richard Spencer. He's on Breitbart. That's kind of disgusting because he's one of these white supremacist guys, ringleaders of all this. But anyway, the problem I see with Steve Bannon, other than just sort of regressive politics just a weird guy altogether, who else does Trump have left to fire? Like, who else is going to support him?
Bruce.
Like, he's gone through all of these advisors.
Bruce.
And now we're down to his family, Ivanka and Jared.
Not going to fire them.
Who, by the way, Bannon detests.
Right.
You know, I'd like to see Steve Bannon take a swing at them and see what happens.
Bruce is
Sebastian Gorka would be one person that I would bring up who's not going
he's
anywhere.
He's fired.
He's
in the chopping block.
He's not on the chopping block.
Unnamed sources, Chris,
that you're hearing this from. We've heard a lot about unnamed sources.
Trump is in trouble.
All coming from the White House, Jennifer, by the way.
Trump.
All the leaks.
Okay, Hermaine.
Trump's in trouble without Bannon. And here's without Bannon. He's in trouble. Here's why. Because Bannon controlled and understood the algorithms. All right? And that's why he's in trouble. Now, can he be effective outside of the White House? Yes. And that's where he should have remained tactically, strategically in the first place.
I agree with that.
But here's where the Trump administration's in trouble. Trump has had a revolving door. You've got to get to some stability. All right? To go from Bannon to a five-star general.
Yeah.
Is some kind of contrast. I think we're waiting to see. It's in the right direction, but it might be too extreme for Trump.
Four-star generals have got a hard time controlling the president.
The point is controlling it. I guess so.
I just want a different thing. Maybe you guys are more in tune than I am. I think I read a lot. I didn't know who Bannon was. I found out once he was appointed by Mr. Trump that he's the worst person in the world.
Yeah.
He's the worst person in the world.
Antichrist.
Now, the Antichrist before that, of course, was Dick Cheney, who was a very good defense secretary and so forth. And all of a sudden, he became the worst person in the world.
Right, absolutely.
And so
Rush Limbaugh was the worst person in the world.
Yes, he was the worst person in the world. It's all part of this destruction. I do think that somebody is out to try to undo Mr. Trump by any means necessary.
Yes, without question.
And they don't have any problem with, as they say in the Bible, bearing false witness.
Absolutely not. I will destroy you
because I don't like your politics.
There's
I don't
no
know
question.
Who Bannon is.
Hold on. This is the political culture that we've had probably for the last 20, 30 years.
I'm not denying
you,
that.
You had that with Clinton.
I had a real
you had it with George W. Bush. You had it with Obama.
Robert Bork.
Yeah, there's no... Oh, yeah. So nothing is new with Trump. Oh. But you know what? I want to speak to something.
But hold on, Mike.
Let me finish my spot.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to say then... Please take that into account then when you're judging whether this is a good thing or a bad thing. If you know he's being destroyed on purpose, that you sometimes can destroy innocent people.
I'm going to speak to what you just said. I thought it was laughable that Steve Bannon was made out to be the puppet master. Saturday Night Live ran with it.
That was a hoot.
And then he was reprimanded. He was taken off the National Security Council. And then you're like, gosh, what? Jeez, is this the puppet master?
Yeah.
The guy that gets pushed to the corner? So I agree with you. He was made into be a villain, the super villain that he wasn't. That doesn't mean the guy had bad ideas. You could still criticize him for his ideas. And, you know, this whole notion that Trump is a victim. It's a victim. It's a coordinated attack. Everyone's going after him. The coordinated attack is happening because of Donald Trump himself.
I know, Chris,
Jekyll and Hyde. Jekyll and Hyde, Jennifer.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
You won't acknowledge that.
Trump's lack of discipline is his problem.
We've got to go to calls. Harold has been waiting from Arlington Heights. Go ahead, Harold. You're on the air.
I'm taking my call, Bruce. I wanted to answer your question originally, though, on Donald Trump's comments about the events in Charlottesville.
And yes.
As an ordinary citizen, I think that, to answer your question, I thought that Donald Trump's comments were right on point to criticize both sides of this contest between these hateful groups. I think most Americans, like myself, see the Nazi Party, the KKK, as racist, and they see the left side have their own racists and bigots and fascists who want to shut down free speech, and you know, they're both one and the same as far as most of us are concerned. I think a lot of Americans think that, oh well, the Russia lie turned out to be zero, so now it's time to move on to, like, maybe the next lie, and that's what stir up the hornet's nest and attack these Confederate symbols and such. But as far as the Confederate symbols are concerned, I would say that a lot of Americans also just see them as American history, very important American history, and the people that go there to protect those things. I would have been one of those if I lived in close enough to go there and say, no, we need to leave Robert E. Lee up there. You know, he was not a person who drove slavery, according to somebody there. He was an ordinary American doing what he thought was best for states' rights versus federalism. So that's my comment.
Okay. Listen, thank you very much for your call. 1-800-723-8029. When we come back, the conversation continues from Chicago. Wherever you're listening from coast to coast this evening, again, there's no television. If you normally are watching this program on television, we're not here tonight because of an illness of our director. But it's National Radio Day, and so it's radio only tonight on Beyond the Beltway. Back in Chicago, thanks very much for joining us this evening. Today, Andrew Young, the former civil rights leader, SCLC, a leader of the civil rights movement, along with many others.
Ambassador to the UN
under
Congress,
Jimmy Carter, member of Atlanta for three terms. He was on Meet the Press with Chuck Todd. And he gave one of the most remarkable interviews that I've seen on that show in a long time. I normally am chastising Meet the Press, but this week I will say, go to the website and look up the interview with Andrew Young. It was a jaw-dropping interview. Now, the man obviously is advanced age. He's not the sharp, extremely articulate man that I remember having a dinner with many years ago. Wow. But the things that he said, and Hermaine, you saw the show, and Chris, you saw the show. So I'm going to ask you, Hermaine, because what he said was that Donald Trump is trapped. And he also said that the Klan should not be blamed because the Klan and a lot of white people in this country who missed the economic opportunities, they're forced to have jobs that lead to black lung disease. And this is the price they're paying to get a piece of economic opportunity in this country. It was a pretty remarkable discussion, and I want to get your reaction as an African-American woman, because you also agreed before we went on the air that you were somewhat surprised and you thought the interview was somewhat remarkable as well. Why did you think it was remarkable?
I thought it was candid.
Yes.
I thought it was wise. I thought you saw wisdom.
Yes.
You saw a freedom fighter who's been fighting the fight for a very, very long time. And I
who said violence never wins.
Never wins. And he gave the example of as a child, how his father would hit him in his face to make him respond. And he would say, if you fight emotionally, you have lost the fight.
Yeah.
I thought that was remarkable. I think he spoke as a politician. I heard a politician speaking.
Okay.
When he said Trump was trapped, that was political strategy speaking. When he talked about the Ku Klux Klan, I think he was talking about a new Ku Klux Klan that he said was trapped with bad jobs, with jobs that led to cancerous lungs.
Yep. Yes.
I thought when he said, and they don't have insurance. And I think that ties into Jews will not replace us, which was the chant that they used as they marched down the street. The Nazis, when they marched down the street, that's what they said, as Jews will not replace us. It sounded like a people threatened by others.
What does that have to do with Andrew Young?
I think it has a lot to do with him, because he got to the core of it. He got to the core of what the real problem is people threatened and people being insecure. I think he responded as a minister, and I think he responded as a politician. That's what I heard.
Chris,
you
heard it as well.
I heard it. I was impressed. I was floored. I told my brother and his family. We had dinner earlier to watch it, like you're saying right now. Yeah. I saw more leadership in eight minutes from Andrew Young than Donald Trump in 8 months. And, you know, when we talk about what he should have said, that is what he should have said. He should have put this in context. We're talking about a guy who had his life threatened, no doubt.
Andrew Young
probably got beat up during the civil rights era.
He did.
And he's saying, I'm not holding these Ku Klux Klan men accountable.
Yeah, he didn't blame them.
No. He's like, their real problem is poverty, and we're not addressing it. I talk about a leader, someone who can lead by example and kind of frame this. And I wish we had a president who could do that.
I think by the way, the key word, and then I want to hear the other side. I think the key word that you just referenced was wisdom. If you get a chance to go look at the interview, it's a pretty remarkable interview, but I think the issue is wisdom. Wisdom was the word that came through with me. 100%. Go ahead, Jennifer, your response.
What I want to try to understand, and if this, what we've just said here, Donald Trump came out and gave an inartful reply, I guess is what I'm hearing, to what happened in Charlottesville. He condemned by name the KKK and white supremacy.
No, he did that on Monday.
Excuse me, I'm talking.
Let her speech.
Let her talk.
Stop interrupting. It's rude. So he condemned those things. And then this gentleman, but he screwed the whole thing up. This gentleman, Andrew Young, came on, who I did not see, and said that he actually came out and said, I do not blame the KKK because they're victims of poverty. Now, but he's a man of wisdom. He showed more leadership than Donald Trump did. Let's say Donald Trump got up there and said those words of wisdom that you just said were so profound. What do you think?
He can't. Fundamentally,
that's right. So how did this gentleman show far more leadership than Donald Trump did when he called KK out and blamed
because
them?
Jennifer.
Here's the difference, Jennifer.
You guys have a bad tendency to interrupt me, and it's really not working for me tonight. It's difficult to hear this because what keeps coming through and coming through yet again is that it's not about the issue of race. It's about Donald Trump. And we need to remove Donald Trump. That is what Black Lives Matter. That's their goal. They've stated it. It's on their website. That's what the Communist Party USA has to say. That's what George Soros Open Society has to say. And that is what Antifa has to say on their thing. We know the Democrats want him gone. We've had a senator from Missouri actually say she wants Trump assassinated, flat out says it and refuses to repudiate it. These are things that are happening. If they don't want him out of office, they want him dead. They just want him out of office. So it's
Jennifer.
Difficult. No, a lot of people do. Are you going to parse out the word assassinated? This is not coming from everybody. I'm not saying that.
Do you have a question?
But I'm saying that this is something that is very difficult for me to understand. How you can just relate what Andrew Young said
okay.
and put it up next
can
to
I,
what Donald Trump
said. Let me give you
said,
a context.
And tell me that that's
you?
In any way
all right.
germane.
Now, let's look, Chris, and then Germaine. Go ahead.
As I said, this is a guy who probably had his life threatened. This is a guy who put his own...
He has credibility. Okay.
Immense credibility. And I'm saying this guy gave. He showed empathy. He didn't put things in the context of race like we're talking about here tonight. He didn't. He talked about greater issues that bind us all together. There's an opioid crisis, an alcoholism problem, a joblessness problem in white America. That is what he was speaking to.
Trump was
to.
Supposed
you know
to say all of
he
that.
Did, but in answering that question, he was a respected African-American civil rights hero. Let me finish my point, who did not play the race
exactly.
card.
Exactly.
That's
he,
it.
Exactly.
He didn't
not like
play
L.
the damn race card.
Exactly
Bruce,
right.
he spoke to the theology
yes.
of King.
Bruce, you got
which
it.
Which was... 3 points, as the slogan was to redeem the soul of America, and it had 3 points. It was the end of racism, poverty, and militarism.
Yes.
And that's what he spoke to. That's what I meant when I said
do you
he
agree,
spoke
but,
as
Germaine,
a minister,
do you agree,
and he spoke as a politician,
do you,
I think.
Do you agree with what I just said, though? That today was an example of a respected African-American leader who did not play the race card.
Yeah.
In a political world where a lot of people, on both sides, a lot of people.
Well, respected civil rights leader who has fought the fight.
Yes.
Bruce, do you know what Donald Trump's race card is? His own ego. He'll never, ever put it in check.
That's right.
He'll never, ever forsake it. It'll always be front and center. It's always about Donald Trump. That's how he's different, Jennifer.
Trump's problem
that's
is
how,
not
that's how
race.
He holds apart.
Trump's
we're going,
problem
we're going
is discipline.
To calls. Jorge,
and
listen
protocol.
To us in El Paso on KTSM. Go ahead from El Paso.
Thank you, Bruce, for taking my call. I want to say that the political process here in the United States is such that people have differing views politically, regardless of what those views are or how they express those views, they shouldn't be ostracized from the political process because of those views. And to suggest that individuals who voice opposition or favor a particular cause that by way of their voice that it's deemed irresponsible or unacceptable, that in itself is cause for their ostracization from the political process. Because if that were to happen, what then would it be for the United States to be formally organized in the manner that it is constitutionally if views that are accepted by
right.
some people
right.
are nevertheless protected by way of the
well, this is the, this is this is this is we began this discussion by talking about free speech and when does free speech become hate speech and when does the unpopularity of one group's speech and thought, when does that move to a line that is legitimately the legitimate action is violence? I say the answer is never.
Bingo.
Never. And there needs to be more absolutists that believe that. But when you have people who believe one way and another group of people that are diametrically opposed to them, when they are going to the same rally and in their minds they're getting ready to scream and shout, and they have brought things with them either to disguise them or placards or guns or bats or whatever, they are coming for a rumble. They're coming for a rumble. They want a fight. They know the media is going to be there. They know the media loves a good fight. If we had peace and harmony in this country, the media, they wouldn't know what story to cover. They're motivated by action and reaction, and when you have disturbances, that's what you're going to have. That's not going to change. It is the emotional response, and when you add to that, if there is a conspiracy, if people have planned in advance just as we had a riot at the Democratic convention in on August 28th of 1968, there were people that were legitimately against the Vietnam War, and there was a larger group of people, or a similar group of people, not larger. They were coming to Chicago for one purpose. They wanted confrontation with the police. They wanted national media to record it. They wanted it to be on television, and it divided America, one side against the other. And I would say that what happened in Charlottesville was very similar to that, and I think we may see the reaction in a very similar way. Remember, there's people that saw it and deplored it. There's other people that were watching this on television, and they saw it from both sides, and that's what presidents Trump spoke to. Back to you. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us. And before we go too much further, in the last segment, we were talking about a noted civil rights leader, Andrew Young, and what he had to say on Meet the Press today. And I want to take a moment because there was a passing of another great civil rights leader yesterday, Dick Gregory, who began his career as a comedian in the 1960s, primarily launched at the Playboy Clubs, and Hugh Hefner gave him a lot of exposure. And he went on to great national fame and, I don't know, a great deal of fortune, but some degree of success. But this was a thinking man's comedian, and he spoke to the issues of that moment. And then he used his celebrity to become very involved in the day-to-day struggle for civil rights in America. He was a remarkable guy. I had the pleasure about 20 years ago of having being at a party with him, engaged in a conversation that was almost 3 hours long. Because Dick Gregory was also the first to really challenge, with some degree of celebrity status, to challenge the findings of the Warren Commission. He was quite an expert on the assassination of President Kennedy and all the cover-up which he believed that the CIA and FBI was involved in. The recent story suggested that there's a great deal of truth to it. But again, he passed away. He was a tremendous leader, strong connections to Chicago, where his career was nurtured. And again, late today, on a completely different level, but a giant of American show business, Jerry Lewis, passed away at 91 years old. A controversial figure, immensely funny in the early part of his career when teamed with Dean Martin. I mean, they were the hottest act in American show business, major stars of television in the early days on the Colgate Comedy Hour. Then there was the split. They went their separate ways. They each had respected careers. Jerry Lewis went on to become a world film icon, primarily in France, with his very, slapstick comedy, and of course his lifelong commitment, at least as an adult, to fighting muscular dystrophy, where he raised several $1 billion in telethons that were part of America's Labor Day tradition for well over 20 years. So two icons of American media, and I would say that one obviously known for his great comedy, and again the other known for great comedy as well, but with a strong social conscience. And so I think the world, with the loss of Dick Gregory and Jerry Lewis, we offer condolences to their families. We have some email that's coming in. This is from Ronald Babcock. Your frenzied guests are equating the demonstrators with the Nazis that gassed Jews in the 1940s and members of the KKK that lynched black people during the Jim Crow era. No one really knows what person in those groups believes today. Are the Nazi marchers big government dictatorial socialists? Is that what your guests are upset about? But they didn't gas any Jews or lynch any black people. Isn't ascribing beliefs to people your guests don't know prejudging them because of some armbands and flags? Plus, even if some of the demonstrators didn't like Jews and black people, does that give Antifa and Black Lives Matter the right to beat them bloody? Do your guests support vigilantism where Antifa and Black Lives Matter take on the roles of judge, jury, and dispensers of punishment? End of quote. Reaction,
well,
Chris.
I think that's the thing that we're trying to sort through here, which Jennifer, I don't hear you speaking to at all. And Mike, I don't know.
I haven't been able to speak much at all, Chris,
Give me a break. Give me a break. I'm at martyrdom here. Listen,
the truth.
There is Nazism, the Ku Klux Klan, overshadow, without question, these little lunatic kids from Antifa. There's no question. You have to name check that. And I know that Donald Trump had to read a speech from a teleprompter where he had to say that. He didn't say it the following day when he was unscripted, when he was unplugged Donald Trump. That's the problem.
The chair now recognizes respond. Jennifer.
Okay. I did speak to that, and I find it interesting that your characterization of Antifa, who have injured numerous police officers, Boston police were making that very clear, that they were assaulting police. So calling them little kids running around like they're just some kind of little, you know, it's the Sparky's gang or something.
Spoiled brats.
Spoiled brats or just having a temper tantrum is disingenuous, and it's difficult for me to argue
it's
when
for
you're
a democratic
talking
society.
About this.
Do you hear about them anymore?
Let's let her
Antifa, they bill themselves as anti-fascist, while they also say they are anarchists. And it's not anti-fascist to come in, break up a rally that has a permit, break up a rally, throw bottles of urine at police, they were complaining about it, and shutting down the rally where it did end early, the police had to end the Boston rally early. That is fascism. Shutting down, not protesting, shutting down a gathering is fascist. So it is incredibly dangerous. It's not a bunch of little kids throwing a tantrum. And it's not a small little sliver either. Antifa is thousands strong. They're making their presence known everywhere, not just at these rallies. And it's something very, very dangerous. And they're being funded. They don't do this for free. They are being funded by George Soros, who admits to them.
I'm waiting for an answer.
What is the question you're asking me?
You cannot equate, and I agree with you, but I'm just defining who these people are. They're little spoiled brats who are violent, got violent tendencies. But what I'm saying
Why
is...
Why do you think they're spoiled
little
brats?
Little spoiled brats.
What evidence do you have they're spoiled brats?
Well, I saw a CNN interview when they went in. And I'm just saying, like, you saw these kids, you heard the voices, and to me, there's no difference between Occupy Wall Street, between Students for Democratic Society, between the Weathermen. I'm saying this is a transient group. They're violent. We should take them serious.
Yes.
But they don't have the historical legacy that the Nazis and the
Chris,
Ku Klux Klan do.
Can I put them
on the same moral plane?
Ahead, Jennifer,
I'd like to speak to
Jennifer.
That. In the past, the KKK and the Nazis and the white supremacists, absolutely. The people that are at those demonstrations, and I don't want to defend them because I'm not one of them, but the people that were at those demonstrations, they could have been spoiled little brats that are upset that decided
you're
to
totally
launch onto this
point,
meeting.
Jennifer.
I'm not missing
the
point,
and you're
Chris.
You're doing the same thing that Donald Trump did.
Chris,
and, you know,
you're making the point. You basically said early in the broadcast, you sort of dismissed them as punk spoiled brats. And these are
violent too. And we should take them seriously.
And violent too. But,
and
but,
we condemn
but let
them.
Me finish. These are the people that are in Berkeley.
Yep. Yeah.
If there's something going on in Portland, they're in Portland.
Yep.
They're in Seattle.
Pittsburgh.
They're in Boston. They're in Pittsburgh. They're in Charlottesville. By the way, when there's a demonstration on the world side, you know, when the G8 meets, they're there, or at least elements of that.
Yeah.
The same type of people are there. Are you telling me? Wait a minute. Are you telling me that there's no coordination and no maybe some large funding that funds these groups? If they're against capitalism, who is getting them from point A to point B?
I'm saying
you're dismissing.
They don't
they're also fomenting a war against America's police. You're dismissing them as like Boy Scouts.
Right.
I'm saying they don't have a place in society because they've reduced themselves to violence. That's what I'm saying.
Well, how do you get rid of them? Do they have a right to do what they're doing?
Absolutely not.
Chris,
if
you
they're
asked
inciting violence.
Chris, you asked me why I'm equating. Excuse me. You asked me why I am saying that the white supremacists and the white nationalists at that movement at Charlottesville are not worse. Why I don't think they're worse than Antifa because of their historical precedent of what they've done. And I'm telling you that there is no difference between violence. And you are prioritizing one violent act over another, and that doesn't fly with me.
I'm saying we fought a world war against Nazis. I'm saying the Ku Klux Klan has been responsible for lynchings, crimes.
I'm talking about today, Chris.
From 1865 to present.
We agree with
Chris,
that.
No kidding.
Just saying, you have to bring intensity.
I want to wait. We're going to take. We could do another hour of that, but I want to ask you a historical question. Once upon a time, the Ku Klux Klan was very strong in this country. Mm-hmm. They went to the Democratic Convention and they were welcomed with open arms. They marched in the inauguration of several U.S. presidents. Okay? They were there. They were public. It was in the late 20s, 30s. They were there. Why did they fade away? What caused them to fade away? Does anybody know?
Ideas are evil.
The laws. Public morality changed.
The laws changed.
Yeah.
Progress. Marching. Demonstration.
Segregation ended.
They
died off.
Did segregation? Did racism go away? Or did
no.
It just,
racism didn't
no.
go away.
It lessened.
They didn't organize anymore. They decided, hey, we're going to get away with the sheets. No, seriously. This happened over a period of time.
Progress. With social progress.
Yeah. Social progress.
Well, I'm not sure about that. The Ku Klux Klan has had several resurgences, you know, in society, and they respond to political changes. They respond to political headwinds, and when they feel threatened.
They killed 4,000.
When they feel threatened, like in the Obama administration, you saw it, and it's true, Ku Klux Klan membership spiked. When they feel that they are in danger, and there's historical precedent for this, they will unite, and they never completely go away, but they will reactivate.
Let me give you a historical point, though. They killed 4,300 people,
absolutely.
Black people, okay,
sure.
in terrorism. Mm-hmm. They were terrorists,
right.
Okay?
Yeah.
No one was ever tried for the crimes.
I don't doubt it.
No one went to jail for the lynching.
And that really leads into something important, which is when you're It has to be mentioned. About
they were
the
a political group.
When we had the KK march in Skokie in 1978, they held it in Skokie because it was such a large proportion of Jewish people there, 5,000 of whom in 1978 actually were in concentration camps. They were direct survivors. They had been persecuted by the types of people who were marching in Skokie. And Elie Wiesel said, and they were objecting to it, and he said, we must let them march. And not only let them march, we must protect their right to march, because if we don't, we are just as bad as what we came from. And what happened? People came, they protested, and no violence broke out. That's the way you do it.
We've got to pause. 1-800-723-8029. We've got lots of callers, lots of conversation. We've touched a nerve tonight. Back shortly. Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. Let's go to James, listening to us in WCGO, our flagship station. Go ahead, James.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay.
I just want to mention that the genesis of all of this started that Friday night when you had a bunch of young guys out there chanting neo-Nazi slogans. That's the genesis of all of this. Now, so to equate that the white supremacists and these Nazis are just some benign group running around the country. That's not true. White supremacy is on the rise, and it's been that way since the 9/11 attacks. And these guys are dangerous. Some of the groups are very dangerous. They've intimidated prosecutors. They've killed people. They're drug traffickers. Now, as far as Antifa, whatever you call them, I just heard of them. Did a little research. It does seem like those guys go around egging for a fight.
Yes.
And Boston police show just how you control something like that. You have to control that engagement when you know things are going to show up. But this thing of saying that we're kind of like letting these Nazis and white supremacists off the hook because we're looking at them, there's just a bunch of little young white boys chanting stuff. But these are not bottom feeders. These were guys who were presidents of the Republican Party on their college campuses. They were hobnobbing with politicians. They are going to go out into the world with
that. Where do you know that from, James? James, where do you know that from?
There are Nazi Republicans?
Where do you know that from?
No, no. One of the guys from Nevada, he is the president of the Republican chapter on campus. The other guy was
Is he a Nazi?
It starts with a C. No, he's not with the
Nazi Republican.
You said he was a. You said that he was one of the Nazi interviewed.
He was an interview by a television station in Reno. He claims he's not. But the whole point of it is that these are just not some bottom feeders of like a bunch of poor guys running around with Nazi flags.
Well, but James, let me ask you the question. We've spent an hour and 45 minutes talking about this issue, okay? What do you think we as a nation should do? The next time there is one of these rallies, how should we react to this rally? What should we do?
I think one of the things is probably, I like the idea of people showing up to counter-protest, but I also like the idea of a very strong police presence to just disengage as much as possible, because I don't think violence is going to help on any side. But I think we need to have a real conversation and kind of take for granted that I can take for granted that some people look at a Confederate flag and a Confederate statue and say it's just Southern heritage. But I would like for someone to take for granted that when I see it, it is a totally different meaning. And as far as I'm concerned, I don't mind if it goes away. Put it in a museum, put it in a private collection. I'm fine with that. I mean, I don't want to destroy it and everything like that, but I'm not one who says, hey, this is fine. And when I heard those kids saying blood and soil, Jews would not replace us, that's not benign to me. That is
No,
it's very hateful. But we can't allow our emotions to get in the way of our thinking. How prevalent do you think Nazis are? What percent of the population do you think are Nazis in the United States? 10, 5, 50?
I don't think that's the case, because
I live here
in Chicago, and you can say how many guys out here are gangbangers? How many black people are actually gangbangers? Not that many, but we can see what a small population.
Everybody ridicules, as far as I know, everybody ridicules these Nazis and these white supremacists, and I've been told that at most there is 100,000 people that hold these horrible views. And I just did some quick arithmetic to figure that out. That's 0.03%. Now, I know lots of things can kill me. I'll be 64 in a week, and I know that heart attack can get me, a stroke can get me. The last thing I worry about is a couple of damn Nazis.
Okay.
Because I just don't think.
Here's the problem,
and you know what we could do when they have another rally? Ignore them. They have the right to meet. In this country, they have free speech rights. Let them meet and yell in their own faces and get all tired out yelling about how horrible other people's are, and then go home.
But the media will cover them. But the media will cover
them.
But why? Just ignore them.
I'm sorry.
But they won't.
But you're missing a point, though. You're missing a point.
Let them finish.
You're missing the point. The point is that the 100,000 who are out there represent a much larger population who probably have that thought, maybe not as strong, but as prevalent. So
let me add one more point to that. I hear your point. If I were to make exactly that same argument with regard to radical Islam, that it's only a tiny percent, that it was 5% or something like that, and therefore I must fear them, I would be called Islamophobic.
Bingo.
You must understand that there's so much politics in this. If you would just ignore their oppressive.
I want to speak to Jim. Your point is, if the numbers are 100,000, per se, what will move that movement forward, not necessarily people that are going to go out and join the party, but they will become sympathizers. If there is a reaction or an overreaction by some municipalities and they start taking these statues down like they did in Baltimore, if these statues and suddenly a whole of these things are all they all disappear, it's going to rile up again what I would describe as good people who they don't like the Nazis, but they don't like the idea of their heritage being pulled off in the middle of the night.
They will be
forced to sympathize with them. Even though they are not Nazis and they're not anti-Semitic, but they don't like the idea that these things are being done in the middle of the night.
Yeah, I guess I think a really cool response to the Nazis would be to go there, not to beat them up, but to laugh at them. A good laugh, and eventually they would become the laughing stock that they are.
Yeah.
These Nazis,
like in Blues Brothers.
That's exactly
like in the
right.
Blues Brothers. Everybody should
talk
go
about
be Blues
they're,
Brothers.
They're
James, we got to say goodbye to you. We're out of time. Nothing personal. We got to say goodbye to all of our guests. We've had a very heated discussion this evening. It will not likely go away, but I want to thank our guests for being with us tonight, and also to Sam Greenberg and Dan Dorfman for their assistance in the production of this program. I'm Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.